you would, take your Bibles and open it to the 22nd chapter of the book of Joshua. 22nd chapter of the book of Joshua. Notice, if you will, as we begin this last section of Joshua, it brings to a close the first section of the Old Testament. Remember, if you will, we started with the book of Genesis, and our intentions was to look at that section ending with all the books between Genesis and Joshua and have the children of Israel in the land of Canaan. We've got the children of Israel in the land of Canaan. Nothing happens. We'll finish our study in the book of Joshua today. Begin the second section of the Old Testament, which would include the book of Judges. That will include about 350 years of time from that standpoint. Another section that will be somewhat interesting because it deals with the history of the children of Israel after the life and death of Joshua, and deals with a lot of their lifestyle changes as they began to evolve into a people that Moses had foretold that they would become. Remember, if you will, on Wednesday night, we closed out with chapter 21 of Joshua, and we looked at verses 43, 44, and 45. Now, those three verses basically make the statement that God had given to the children of Israel everything that he had promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And it basically dates back to Genesis chapter 12, when God speaks directly to Abraham and tells him to leave his family and go into the land of Canaan. So we close that section on Wednesday night. Are there any questions or comments before we get into chapter 22 this morning on material that we've covered thus far? Well, I've either done a mighty, mighty good job or a mighty bad. We'll continue on then into chapter 22. Now notice, if you will, how that chapter begins. Verse 1. Joshua called the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half tribe of Manasseh. Alright, now who is he talking to now when he talks about the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half tribe of Manasseh?
Absolutely.
That is the group that asked Moses if they could stay on the other side of Jordan. Yes. Touch with. They are, as Benita said, the group that made a plea to Moses before Moses' death, wanting to know if they could take their allotment on that side of Jordan. And they were instructed and told that they could do that under one circumstance. Does anybody remember what those circumstances were? Okay. That they would go over and lead the way to help their brethren across Jordan, conquer the land of Canaan. And after they did that, then they could go back and live with their families and their children and take their land on that location. So that is exactly what Joshua, or who Joshua is addressing at this time. Because after all, what had taken place? They had fulfilled their responsibility. They had done exactly what Moses instructed them to do and Joshua instructed them to do. And as we said, as we closed out chapter 21, God had delivered into the hands of Israel all the land that He promised Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob that they would get. Notice how He words it. Verse 45 of chapter 21 of Joshua. There failed not aught of any good thing which the Lord had spoken unto the house of Israel. All came to pass. Now that is a pretty bold, clear-cut statement, emphasizing twice in one verse that they got it, everything, and they got all that God promised. So you can see why now He's addressing the Gadites, the Reubenites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh. Let's see what He says to them, beginning in chapter 22, verse 2. You have kept all that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded you, and have obeyed My voice in all that I commanded you. You have not left your brethren these many days until this day, but have kept the charge of the commandment of the Lord your God. And now the Lord your God hath given rest unto your brethren, as He promised them. Therefore now return you and get you into your tents unto the land of your possession, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you on the other side of Jordan. But, you know, we said, watch those buts and those ifs. But take diligent heed to do the commandment of the law which Moses, the servant of the Lord, charged you, to love the Lord your God, to walk in His ways, to keep His commandments, and to cleave unto Him and serve Him with all your heart and all your soul. So Joshua blessed them, sent them away, and they went unto their tent. So notice, if you will, that kind of signifies that the work has been done, the goal has been accomplished, and the children of Israel now have the land that God promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
You wonder
that they would inherit.
Other than what happened with Achan, of course they slew everybody.
Well, we know they lost 36 there, and we don't have any significant numbers to know. It doesn't mention it to us if they did. And the only reason they lost those was because of sin that entered the camp. That's true. Good point. To our knowledge, only 36 lost their lives in accordance to that trip. Notice as we go on into Joshua chapter 22, it says in verse 8, He spake unto them, saying, Return with much riches unto your tents. Very much cattle with silver, gold, brass, and iron. With very much remnant, divide the spoil of your enemies with your brethren. Now, notice, if you will, that was the instruction that Moses gave to them, basically dating back as far as Mount Sinai. That the instructions were, they go into Canaan, they take the land, and that there was a certain section of the spoil that would be theirs. Part of it would go to the Levitical priesthood, which would be the equivalent of giving it to God, but they would be able to take the spoil of what they conquered. So Joshua is telling them, go ahead and take your spoil, and you divide it among those 2.5 tribes that on yonder side. Because in reality, when all this started, they were on that side of Jordan, camped out, waiting for the command to cross Jordan and go into the land of Canaan. Now they're on the other side in the land of Canaan, ready to go back across the Jordan and take their land where they made a commitment to take before they helped fight the battle to take the land of Canaan. Now notice, if you will, the children of Reuben and the children of Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh returned and departed from the children of Israel out of Shiloh, which is in the land of Canaan, to go into the country of Gilead, to the land of their possession, whereof they were possessed according to the word of the Lord by the hand of Moses. Now let's stop right there for just a moment. And let's talk about Shiloh. We know that Shiloh was a town, a city, that they had captured. But what was specific and special about Shiloh? It was a or the permanent place of worship. Remember, if you will, when they left Canaan or left Mount Sinai, they took the tabernacle on the priest's shoulders and they moved it from location to location. Now they were in the land of Canaan. They had conquered the land of Canaan. And God said, Shiloh is going to be your place of worship. When you go to offer your sacrifices, where are you going to go? Shiloh. Because it was Shiloh that was appointed, that God said, this is special. This city is special. Did that ever change?
No.
When?
When they started going to Jerusalem.
And when did that take place?
Solomon built the temple. Is that what you're saying? Get again.
Under David. And under the kings, which will be our next section of study. We're going to get through the judges. And then at the end of the judges, Israel is going to be terribly upset with the judging system. They're going to want kings just like... You would think they would have got that, wouldn't you? Every city had a king. And they went to battle and whipped every king they faced to take the land of Canaan. Of all things, what did they want?
The king.
They wanted them a king. So God gave them a king. And of course, That is where Jerusalem comes into the picture as being the place of worship. Why don't we take just a second and turn over to reinforce that. Let's turn over to the book of Jeremiah. Turn over to Jeremiah chapter 7. Jeremiah chapter 7. Now this is long after Canaan and them conquering and possessing Canaan. It's long after the judges. It's even after David and Solomon. But look, if you will, in Jeremiah chapter 7, and notice, if you will, and let's begin reading in verse 8. Now we're reading about the descendants of these same people that we're reading about here in Joshua chapter 22. Behold, you trust in lying words that cannot profit. Boy, things had changed, hadn't it? You don't trust in Jehovah God who delivered the land of Canaan into your hands. You're now trusting in lying words that can't profit you. You steal and murder and commit adultery and swear falsely and burn incense unto Baal and walk after other gods whom you know not. Kind of a sad commentary, is it not? That's where we're headed, folks. Come and stand before me in this house, which is called by my name, and say, we are delivered to do all these abominations. In this house, which is called by my name, become a den of robbers in your eyes. Behold, even I have seen it, saith the Lord. Now, Jeremiah is speaking to Judah and Israel, because they've now divided into two sections or two groups, the north and the south. And God is telling Jeremiah, go call all the people to Shiloh. Call them to my house. And I want you to tell them this. Give them this message. You are a bunch of thieves and robbers and murderers and adulterers. And you don't trust in me anymore. You trust in gods that you don't know. And this city, this place of worship, has become a den of robbers. Billy, there's that next little word, but. Mm-hmm. Look in verse 12. But, go you now unto my place which was in Shiloh. Now remember where it was. Why did he say was? Well, it's not there, but they had changed it. They were now worshiping in Jerusalem where the temple was. He says, where I set my name, look at this, at the first, and see what I did to it for the wickedness of my people Israel. And now, because you have done all these works, saith the Lord, and I spake unto you, rising up early and speaking, but you heard not. And I called you, but you answered not. Therefore will I do unto this house, which is called by my name, wherein you trust, and unto the place which I gave to you and to your fathers, as I have done to Shiloh. I'll cast you out of my sight, as I have cast all your brethren, even the whole seed of Ephraim. Therefore pray not thou for this people, neither lift up nor cry nor prayer for them, neither make intercession to me, for I will not hear thee. Seest thou not what they do in the cities in Judah and in the streets of Jerusalem? So you see what he's doing? He's using the city of Jerusalem and the city of Shiloh interchangeably. He says, you know, I gave you Shiloh in first, allowed you to move it to Jerusalem. Now remember, they're divided. 10 of the 12 tribes are in Assyrian captivity, and what's about to take place? The king of Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, is going to sweep into the Assyrian capital. He's going to overthrow the Assyrians, and when he overthrows the Assyrians, he's going to take the 10 tribes that are already in captivity to Assyria. I'm not going to stop there. He's going to march right down into the city of Jerusalem, and he's going to bind into chains and carry into Babylonian captivity those that are left, which would be Judah, Jerusalem, and the Levites that stayed behind with them. They'll go into captivity because of their disobedience. Now, turn over in the same book now to the 31st chapter of the book of Jeremiah. Jeremiah chapter 31. Now notice what it says beginning in verse 27. Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will sow the house of Israel and the house of Judah with the seed of men and with the seed of the beast. And it shall come to pass that like as I have watched over them to pluck up, to break down, to throw down, to destroy, and to afflict, so will I watch over them to build and to plant, saith the Lord. In those days they shall say no more, the fathers have eaten sour grapes, the children's teeth are set on edge. But every one shall die for his own iniquity. Every man that eateth the sour grape, his teeth shall be set on edge. Behold, the days come. Listen to this. Behold, the days come, saith the Lord, that I will make a what?
New covenant.
a new covenant with the house of Israel and the house of Jacob, not according to the covenant that I made with their fathers in the day that I took them by the hand to bring them out of the land of Israel, which my covenant they break, although I was a husband unto them, saith the Lord. But this shall be the covenant that I will make with the house of Israel after those days, saith the Lord. I'll put my law in their inward parts, write it upon their hearts, and will be their God, and they shall be my people, and they shall teach no more every man his neighbor and every man his brother, saying, know the Lord, for they shall all know me, from the least of them to the greatest, saith the Lord. For I will forgive their iniquity, and I will remember their sins no more. Now, what covenant, or what two covenants, is he talking about here? Okay. He's talking about the covenant that he made with the children of Israel through Moses at Sinai, as well as the future covenant that he'll make when Christ would die on the cross, be raised from the dead, ascend back to heaven, and establish his kingdom. Now, he said this covenant is going to be different than the covenant that he made with the children of Israel back at Sinai. What's going to be a distinguishing feature that's included in the second covenant that was not included in the first?
Anybody.
It doesn't make any difference where they live, what color their skin is, what nationality they are. If they accept Christ by faith, are buried with their Lord in baptism to rise and walk in newness of life, God will translate them, add them into His family, His kingdom. The old covenant was to who? Israel and Judah. And they broke it. They turned into robbers and murderers and adulterers. And God said, I'm taking it away. Now let's go back to Joshua chapter 22. Because we've got a completion of that covenant. That first covenant included a land promise, and they got it. Every bit of it. That covenant included Israel as a race of people, and it was theirs. Now they have possessed it. All but 2.5 tribes, and they made the choice to take theirs on yonder side of Jordan, which would include later on their covenant with Israel and with God. Because notice, if you will, on your map, at the bottom, you see the Red Sea. Dead Sea. And if you'll notice, the Jordan River runs into, dumps into the Dead Sea. And on one side of Jordan, there is Reuben and Gad and Manasseh, the half tribe of Manasseh. It's included into the land of Canaan. Though it's on one side of Jordan, And the rest of the tribes took theirs on the other side. Now remember, they had to take the Moabites, the Edomites, the Ammonites, and they had to take the giants that lived in that area before they could control it. They got it. Now notice, if you will, across the Jordan, you'll see the rest of the tribes that make up the 12 who did not get any land. Levites. They got some cities. Remember, if you will, on Wednesday night, we talked about how that it all came to an end and everybody drew lots to get their land assignment. And then after the land assignment, the cities of refuge were laid out. So if someone had committed a murder and they wanted a just trial, they could go to the cities of refuge, get a fair trial. But not only that, the cities that the Levites would obtain. Now remember, if you will, part of the sacrifices that the children of Israel would make on a regular basis went to the Levites. So they needed places for their cattle, their lambs, their sheep. The sacrifices that they would have to make their living off of, they had some cities that they were given for that purpose. And now as we begin chapter 22, God, through Joshua, is addressing these 2.5 tribes. And all of this was taking place where? In the city of Shiloh. The meeting place of all Israel. And the instructions were given. Now notice, if you will, what is about to take place. Verse 10. When they came unto the borders of Jordan, that are in the land of Canaan, the children of Reuben, the children of Gad, and the half tribe of Manasseh built there an altar by Jordan. Yes. We made mention of it, but no, we really haven't. Now, take into consideration, they were given complete instructions back at Sinai as to the church furniture, the furnishings, and all the altars, the size, the descriptions, how it was to be moved, how it was to be used. Now, this particular altar that we're talking about here has nothing to do with the altar that set before the tabernacle. It has nothing to do with the altar that the Israelites brought their animals to and offered as a sacrifice to Jehovah God in Shiloh. But that's not what the rest of the children of Israel thought. Now, let's get everything in perspective. The true altar of worship was at Shiloh, because that's where they were going to meet. The tabernacle was set up at Shiloh, and the altar was there at Shiloh. But these 2.5 tribes right there on the brink of the Jordan, what did they do? They built them an altar. And it created and caused a division in Israel.
They jumped to conclusions. They didn't find out. They just saw it and they assumed.
That's such a good point. We're not guilty of that today, are we?
He says it was a very impressive altar.
Actually, I have not. Let's see. It says here.
They returned, so they went across.
They came unto the borders of Jordan that are in the land of Canaan. So it would have to have been right on the brink of the Jordan before they crossed it going back to their headquarters.
So that's what gave them the problem.
And they, as Charles said, assumed. They assumed that these 2.5 tribes were not going to go back to Shiloh and make their sacrifices on the true altar. And they assumed that they were going to do that right there on the brink of the Jordan. Now, if you'll remember, David, and here's where you may be thinking, back in Deuteronomy chapter 12, verses 13 and 14, Moses specifically instructed them, the only place that you can make a sacrifice is on this altar. What altar? The altar that was sitting in front of this tabernacle. The altar that they built there at Sinai and moved across the wilderness for 40 years. Now they're in Canaan. They've got Shiloh. And God said, here's the place for worship. And lo and behold, those 2.5 renegade tribes on the other side of Jordan build them a special altar right here on the riverbank for us to look at. They sinners and they going to hell. We assume. Now look what's going to happen. The children of Israel heard, behold, the children of Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh built an altar. So they go to each head of the tribe and they get their tribesmen. You're our representative. You go and you face those people. And you accuse them of their sin and tell them to repent of their sin. Now this is understandable because we've just talked about Achan. And they saw what that sin got them into. It cost them 36 men. They've already seen what happened out in the wilderness for 40 years. God turned the wilderness into a graveyard. So they're going to get this problem started, solved right away. They go down. They call them together. And you read the rest of this chapter. And I want you to notice that what these 2.5 tribes says, guys, y'all made a mistake. We never, ever intended to offer a sacrifice upon that altar. Notice we've learned how important stacks of stones were. It started when they set the first foot over the priest into the Jordan. Stack of stones. Get across. Stack of stones. Go here, go there. Stack of stones. They built an altar to remind their descendants. You've got just as much a right to go to Shiloh and worship God as they have. Don't ever forget that you're just as much a part of the children of Israel as those tribes on the other side of the river. So it really turned out to be nothing. But you see, they took it as a threat to their spiritual relationship with God. We'll stop there. We'll conclude Wednesday night our closure in the book of Joshua, and maybe have time to get into the